Betting on sports can be hard, but hiring Morgan & Morgan is easy. Morgan & Morgan is America's largest injury law firm. They have over 100 offices nationwide and more than 1,000 lawyers. Their fee is free unless they win. For more information, go to forthepeople.com/bestbets or dial pound law, pound 529 from your cell phone. That's forthepeople.com/bestbets. This is a paid advertisement.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Welcome in, everybody. Tuesday morning edition of A Numbers Game with Kelly Bidlin holding it down in downtown Las Vegas at our Circus Sportsbook studios. I'm Ben Wilson. Kelly, great to be back with you, sir. Big show for us today. And as we get rocking for the NBA Cup, it is back today. I know you are very extra fired up for the quarterfinals getting underway tonight, sir.
That's right. I'm excited. NBA Cup. Gil's not here. This gets to be like the, you know, when you get like Family Guy, there's like the Meg episodes of Family Guy they always make fun of. This is like the Kelly episode of A Numbers Game. NBA Cup, baby. Let's get way too excited for it. I am pumped. I'm pumped. And Ben, I've got bets on both games, which I really didn't think I was going to have probably about 24 hours ago. Yeah.
Interesting. I thought you would have said like the Marge Simpson episode, but okay. So that's all right. Just based on last night, we have a loaded guest list as well. Drew Dinsick going to kick things off in 15 minutes from NBC Sports, talking not only the NBA Cup, but also a little week 15 in the NFL. It is a Champions League soccer day today. Let's go. Get Paul Carr in from True Media Sports at 10:45 Eastern as well. After we talk some NBA Cup individually, get Kelly's plays, and then Will Hill, our longtime VSiN contributor, joins us top of our 11 a.m. Eastern hour to talk all things NBA. We'll have NFL, maybe some college basketball and college football with Will, and then Nick Whalen on the NBA from SiriusXM at 11:30 Eastern. We start, though, with a look back to what happened last night, Kelly. And if your name is not Amani Oruwariye, you're feeling pretty good today. But unfortunately for Mr. Oruwariye, shades of Leon Lett last night. What, 31 years and I guess a couple of, 500 maybe feet to the left of where the old Texas Stadium used to be.
Yeah.
Similar situation as he tries to field a blocked punt. It allows Cincinnati to get the ball. And for us, you know, from the betting angle, this is a second straight week as Cincinnati scores a late Joe Burrow to Ja'Marr Chase 40-yard touchdown. Second straight week where if you're on the underdog in Monday Night Football, you just get your heart ripped out in as gruesome and gory fashion as humanly possible. Bengals, even though they dominated the box score, Kelly, never the right side as far as actually covering the spread. And not only do they get the ball back late when Dallas should have had it in Brandon Aubrey field goal range in a 20-20 game, sending the three survivor entrants who were on Cincinnati into peril and panic. Instead, the Bengals move down, and not only do they get a game-winning field goal, but they get better than that. They get the covering touchdown as it lands 27-20. You just feel for the dog bettors who, as we discussed yesterday, a lot of folks on Dallas. That was a big, big move. Got all the way down to 4.5 at close, down from the 6.5 number. And it's really been, wouldn't you say, for underdog bettors, just the season in a nutshell, right? So many favorites that find ways to win and cover.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't even see that's where it closed. It got all the way down to 4.5. Yeah. Wow, that is wild. Yeah, I know you and I were both talking, both leaning Dallas. There's we always talk about the weird feelings in betting you get sometimes. Isn't that a good one, Ben, when you were leaning really close to one side and then you get something fluky like that happens at the end of the game? You're like, thank God I wasn't involved in that one. Yeah, brutal beat if you were on Dallas. Dallas, and I guess I'll say the over too, Ben. I mean, I don't know about you, but after you're watching that first half play out and you kind of start thinking a lot of what we talked about yesterday. How is either one of these defenses slowing down the other? Both offenses pretty much doing whatever they want. Rico Dowdle ends up finishing with 131 yards on the ground. The Cowboys running game looking pretty good. And, a game of consequence, I guess, for both sides that ends up ending in a very, very wacky way. I thought it was a little bit of ball don't lie situation, right? I thought Burrow with that missed face mask call was pretty egregious. And then, just a short while later, blocked punt that gets recovered by the punt team, which, Ben, I don't know if I've ever seen in my life, to be honest.
And it's crazy you bring that up, Kelly, because I thought the same thing. I'm like, I feel like this doesn't happen. I mean, everybody knows the Leon Lett play, even if you're not old enough to remember, just because of how infamous it became, which was on a blocked field goal where there was nobody around the ball. And then I'm thinking, there has to be another situation. And I see this from a guy who's been on with us at VSiN in the past, Scott Reichel at Reichel Radio. Literally the exact same thing happened in a Cowboy game with the exact same coaching staff, including the same special teams coach in 2021. And I'm watching the video. It was that Broncos Cowboy game when Denver went into Dallas as 9.5-point dogs and just blew out the 6-1 Cowboys. That was their only home loss of the regular season, I believe, that year. And the same exact thing happened. So this is just a weird Cowboy thing, I guess. But yeah. They're the ones who blow it. And you can't help now but wonder. I mean, did you see the Micah Parsons interview shot they aired on SportsCenter last night, where he was literally in tears talking about his teammate, his linebacker, DeMarvion Overshown, who suffered a bad injury, who had been this unbelievable bright spot emerging as a second-year player on the Dallas defense. You know, Cowboys, as much as we viewed them as their season being basically over, you know, they still were technically in it, and this really puts a nail in the coffin on their playoff hopes. So you just have to wonder, on the short week with an emotional loss like that, how do they get themselves up off the mat now, going to Carolina, who is set to likely be favored here for the first time in 34 games. It's fascinating for the handicap this week.
Oh, good. We actually got an exact number on those games. Thanks. I was trying to add that up yesterday during the show with last time. It's been a favorite. Good job. Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, we talked about it yesterday when we were going over these games. I think Carolina is the only way you could look. We wanted to see how this played out last night. Now that you've got Dallas out of things, it's still Carolina's the only way I could look, Ben, but I'm not making that bet. I wouldn't make that bet with your money. I'm not making it with my money.
Panthers 5-0 against the spread since November 1st. The 33-game streak from Evan H. Abrams, where you follow him. Longest streak without being favored since the Browns from 2015 to 2018 had 37 straight games as an underdog. And ironically, as much as you're saying, oh, why would Carolina be favored? You know, the way Bryce Young is playing, Carolina probably has the better quarterback in the game when you compare it to Cooper Rush, who, it's not like you expect a ton from Rush as a backup, but he has struggled mightily just with completing throws that are out there in the open for him. And this game is now touched two. It is touched two at Circa behind you, Kelly, and a couple other books. 1.5 there, most of the market.
One and a half twos. Yeah, so really not much movement from what we've seen the other day. And my apologies to the Cowboys. Sorry, I forgot. Basically, everybody in the NFC is still alive, technically, for a playoff spot. So, yeah, they're still out there. Technically. It's got a lot of work to do. So.
Well, like in Cincinnati, I mean, same way. We were joking yesterday.
The Panthers are technically still alive. So, there we go. Big game this weekend.
Look, people making fun of all the folks who are on the Carolina over 4.5 wins. Like, that is not dead by any means. I mean, there's a legit path there. Three wins so far for Carolina. They could pick off a couple more before the season is over.
Pump the brakes real quick. As well as we've been talking about how they're playing, they still ain't picking up W's is the problem. They might be covering spreads, but they're not picking up W's a lot here.
I'm not very good at math, but if they do cover the spread, they will win this week. That's at least the thing for Carolina. They would need one more some way, somehow, to get over that win total. And for Cincinnati, the joke has been, all right, you watch CBS, which you would think would be more pro Bengals chances since that is the AFC network. They don't even have Cincinnati in there, at least for this past week. They did not have Cincinnati in there still in the hunt graphic, which they're usually very liberal about the teams they include, Kelly. Meanwhile, Fox did have Cincinnati in the hunt graphic. So Cincinnati's technically in. They went from 14-1 down to 11-1 after last night, and a lot of it is schedule based since they get four teams in the AFC. It's at Tennessee, and that line reopens. Cincinnati either 4.5 or 5 on the road next week. You'll get Cleveland at home, and then you get Pittsburgh late in the season in a potential spot. You know, you wonder, all right, how much will Pittsburgh be playing for? That's week 18 there, and then you also have a game at home against Denver. But it's always a thing. You have to look at teams on the other side of that. So since he's 3 back of the three teams tied at 8-5 for the 3 wildcard spots with 4 weeks to go, you know, Denver's probably the one team who would be most likely to fall out of that. But as you made a bet yesterday, we didn't really have a chance to get to it on the openers. You know, Denver out of the bye has a really good opportunity with a game at home against Indianapolis. A really fascinating matchup since both teams are out of the bye. Indy certainly desperate as well at 6-7. But if Denver at least takes care of business there, now you'd look at the path for Cincy, and you know, even if they are to win out, I don't know that an 11-1 bet really makes all that much sense. because of what is at play with the other teams they're trying to chase.
Yeah, I would need much longer odds than that. I mean, even the Dolphins won game better than them, right? It's still technically in that mix as well. I think I'd like their chances even better than Cincinnati's to make it. And yeah, I mean, massive game this weekend. You're right. I did bet the Broncos on the opener. That line's come down pretty significantly. I know we got Drew Dinsick coming up next. I believe he's on the other side, but we'll find out. I think his numbers had this spread pretty far off. I just think Denver coming off the bye, Sean Payton, experienced head coach there. They know what's in front of them. They know they control their own destiny here, getting into the playoffs. Colts are one of the teams you've got to hold back. And, man, Anthony Richardson has been playing a little bit better. This Colts team has looked a little bit better. But, Ben, they've been one of the toughest teams for me to handicap all season long. It feels like they want to lean on that running game more, but then you always see these wild incompletions from Anthony Richardson. I do think he's playing a little bit better ball, but I think asking them to go into Denver, pick up this win straight up is a pretty tough ask. So yeah, I am on Denver this week. And like you said, Cincinnati, a lot of things are going to have to go their way for them to end up making it.
Yeah, I certainly, based on just, you know, basic numbers, would have leaned the Denver way. I assume that number would be pushing near a touchdown based on the Denver performances. And certainly it is way, way lower than that. We're down to 3.5 at a couple shops. A 4 is most of the market. I just am always concerned when you have a team playing so well, or even if they aren't playing well, getting lots of breaks like Denver. Go back to the last Monday night game. I don't like betting on those teams coming out of their bye week when you have all that positive rhythm, positive momentum disrupted naturally. Mm-hmm. Whereas the bye did come at a much better time for Indianapolis, a chance to reset for them. Matchup to watch there, though. I mean, it's an Indianapolis O-line that has been good creating holes on the ground for Anthony Richardson and Jonathan Taylor, top 6 in the league. Denver top 5 run defense. That's what this comes down to, at least for me, Kelly, is part of the handicap. And that's the matchup I'm not sure we know have a definitive answer to yet, because that is strength on strength. And maybe Drew Dinsick will have some thoughts on that on the other side. We're just getting started. Tuesday edition of A Numbers Game. Drew Dinsick will join us up next from NBC Sports and Bet the Edge podcast, talking NFL Week 15 as well as the NBA Cup when we come back right here on A Numbers Game.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Ready to elevate your tailgate game? You have to try Sewell's Barbecue. Born from a backyard cookout in a mason jar of unforgettable flavor, Sewell's has become a Southern favorite, lighting up taste buds from Georgia to the Carolinas. From ribs and wings to a backyard burger, Sewell's takes every bite to the next level. You can order online at sewellsbarbecuesauce.com. That is SEWELLSBBQSauce.com. We're just getting started. Tuesday edition of A Numbers Game. A lot of NFL talk so far about the transition, not only into some NFL, but some NBA with our guy, Drew Dinsick, as we go out to our progressive guest line. Kelly, I need to ask Drew a question here, because you've been talking about how when we're doing shows remote, you like to just stare into my soul. And I can definitely feel it on my side of the camera. Drew, when you're doing spots, can you feel Kelly's, you know, his intent gaze staring you right deep into the heart over there?
I'll go a different direction. It brings me a little bit of peace. You know, it brings it centers me. It brings me some calm to know that I need to be on my best behavior, you know?
Oh, wow. That's the look that I give. Yeah, sure.
I more feel like caffeine osmosis coming my direction. But, to each his own, each interpretation. Drew Dinsick from NBC Sports, Bet the Edge podcast. So Kelly was teeing it up. He believes that for week 15 in the NFL, Drew, you are going to be oppo of him looking at Indianapolis. Were you part of this wave of Colt money that hit the market yesterday, as we're down to 3.5 in some shops?
Yeah, I agree with this. And I think Colts are very live, not just to win this game, but to storm into the seventh seed right now. I think 10 wins gets you the seventh seed in the AFC. And right now, at least, the Colts have the tiebreaker over the Steelers, albeit it is very unlikely that comes into play. But a head-to-head win against the Broncos basically flips probability for playoffs between those two teams. Right now I have it 60-40 Broncos. A win by the Colts would actually make it 70-30 Colts for me. So got a lot of ways to attack this, obviously. You know, the money line price for the Colts in this game is not that different than the make the playoff price for the Colts. If the Colts lose this game, I don't think there's really a way in for them. They're playing their best football right now. They're coming off of a bye where they're wide receivers are getting healthy. I'm expecting Josh Downs to be a full go. Michael Pittman and Alec Pierce needed, definitely needed the break to get right, because those guys were playing through injuries. The offensive line needed the break to get better and play through injuries. And then in general, I think the defense, while not really willing to go to war with this defense often, they do play pretty squarely into exactly what Bo Nix has not shown us he has any ability to solve. When you go over the tape against the Browns, obviously the Broncos scored a billion points in that one, 14 of which were obviously generated by defensive touchdowns. But when you split out Browns coverage between man coverage and zone coverage, Nix was useless against man, and he was very effective against zone. And Gus Bradley, I think, is in general willing to tack into zone, man pretty aggressively, which I think should keep this Broncos team in a bit of check to make things a little bit more challenging for the Broncos. It was very obvious in that Browns game how much they miss Riley Moss. I'm not expecting Riley Moss available in the secondary here, so there's going to be a lot of places to pick at. If you are Shane Steichen and you have an elite set of weapons who can get open downfield. So, yeah, I think Colts covered this number. I think Colts win. And if I'm the Broncos, I'm very nervous about what my path to the playoffs look like if I lose this game.
So Drew and Kelly Oppo here. Drew Dinsick joining us here on a numbers game at Whale _ Capper, by the way, if you don't follow Drew already. Art, what do you make, too, of the – we've had a number of moves here coming overnight from Monday now into Tuesday. A lot of Buffalo money pouring into the market off the huge offensive output against Detroit. Is this more because we've seen Buffalo – they've just looked like a different team when they're indoors and what they can really unlock with the Josh Allen-led offense. What do you make of that specific matchup now? As we see the Lions here getting bet against down to as low as 1.5, do you make Buffalo and Detroit a pick 'em on a neutral field?
I do. And I think the sentiment is probably more related to speculation about the defensive injuries for the Lions. The spine of the defense, the interior of the D line, everyone is hurt and they all matter. And I think the fact that your D line now, which did play up in that first half against the Packers before the injuries really set in. If you deplete that unit, now you're not stopping the run on top of, having relatively little hope of succeeding in the red zone as far as defense goes. So I think, weirdly, this creates a paradigm where Detroit, if they want to win this game, isn't just you have to score every time you have the ball, which they can do. It's you have to score every time you have the ball, and you have to create relatively long drives where you are matriculating over the balance of 10 minutes of time of possession. And then you just need to be able to create one, maybe two turnovers of Josh Allen to win this game. And that's a pretty fragile state, especially if you are a favorite. And so I completely understand why there is Bills money coming in. I kind of actually lean under 54.5 right now, just because I do think there will be a premium from both of these teams to try to lean into the run and have more sustained drives and protect their defense a bit. In order to get to 55 points, you're going to need basically superlative red zone success from both of these teams combined with some explosive plays. And I'm not really sure either of these teams is served by, kind of attacking explosively. So this to me looks like it could be a surprise under, even if there is just absurd offensive efficiency in this game. And I haven't played it yet, but I definitely understand why there's love for the Bills.
Right, move of 3.5 points to the over, Drew, what you're talking about. You are paying a premium if you want to go over now at 55 in the Bills-Lions game. We'll get to NBA Cup in a second. Any other NFL early you've bet here for Week 15?
I'm kind of surprised that there's Steelers money. This is the one move in the market that I really just didn't see coming, honestly. Eagles at 4 looks good to me. I like the Seahawks at +3. I kind of am, again, a little bit blown away that we're getting a somewhat reasonably priced 3 on Seattle at home here, considering that Seattle is, getting consistently better week by week. Their defense is now very clearly top 7 as far as quality of play and just ability to limit opponents. And, the Seahawks offense, it is Jekyll and Hyde, depending on how aggressive the pass rush they are facing. And the Packers have not shown an ability to consistently generate pressure. So I'm not worried at all about the Seahawks going score for score and getting a win against the Packers here. So that number looks quite wrong to me. And And then, you know, everything else that I'm showing edges on right now are pretty, pretty suspect games where motivations are in question and jobs are, you know, on the line. And I'm not 100% sure I have the intestinal fortitude to play some of these terrible dogs.
All right, Drew, NBA Cup. Let's get to the good stuff. Starting tonight, quarterfinals, Magic at Bucks, the early game, Mavericks at Thunder late. I've got Wisconsinite Ben Wilson I'm doing the show with, Wisconsinite Nick Whalen coming on later, so I know there's going to be a little built-in bias. I like the Bucks, though, tonight. Talk me out of it, Drew. You're the only, you're the voice of reason when it comes against the Bucks.
Well, I was usually I'm the voice of reason saying there's value on the Magic, and I do not feel that way right now. No way, no how. This Magic team, in the absence of Franz Wagner, is going to look quite different, especially against the league competition playing for something. So I'm with you 100% here. I could see this Bucks team boat racing the Magic in this spot, and it's really disappointing. And just, you know, I was having a great Saturday. It was, you know, Christmas parade here in Long Beach, 70 degrees. I mean, you know, everything's going my way.
Yeah.
And then,
Then that alert hit.
Hits the wire. Franz Wagner torn oblique. I was spending that MIP money on Christmas presents, Kelly. I don't know. We're gonna have to defer some credits card state. No, I'm just kidding. That was really, really a bummer. And it's going to take the Magic a little bit of time because it hurts their defense really for this matchup a lot. And I think the Bucks are going to basically be able to pick their number. And I think the Bucks probably go into the finals.
Well, that's not going to help me out, Ben. This might be a rather large wager for me tonight. Bucks, anything else in the late game for you and anything tomorrow with the Hawks, Knicks, Warriors at Rockets?
Yep. I played Mavericks at +5. I thought it was going to move more. The fact that you can get 4.5 still, I think, is a really good bet. This number should be more like 3, in my opinion. And the Mavericks are sort of the clear and obvious buy low in basically every way right now. Mm-hmm. I think the Mavericks are going to get a top 2 seed in the West. They could run down the Thunder for all I can tell you. But they look now like they're playing like the high quality team we saw at the end of last year's regular season, which was the second best in basketball. They're going to absolutely put pressure on this Thunder team. They can win. And if I had to, in the blind, pick, you know, with our NBA Cup final, I would take Bucks Mavericks right now.
Drew Dinsick with us here on A Numbers Game. Follow him at @Whale_Capper from the Deep Dive Podcast and NBC Sports. That would be your final here if we're putting you on the spot. Bucks Mavs NBA Cup.
Yeah, I think the Knicks cover and win against the Hawks, but that's a pretty weak opinion. That number looks right to me. And I think the Rockets can eke out a win against the Warriors. I don't really favor either the Knicks or the Rockets in their potential semifinal matchups. But I'll tell you what, Bucks-Knicks total can't be high enough.
Yeah, seriously, that'll be you'd figure. Put in the 240s for that one there. Drew, as always, man, appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, best of luck, guys.
And we'll get into Kelly's NBA Cup best bets. I'm glad, you know, the Wisconsin influence, it's, you know, it doesn't impact our betting, Kelly, but, you know, you got Drew to maybe push you over the edge. So we'll talk NBA Cup when we return right here on A Numbers Game.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number 2 of A Numbers Game starts right now with Kelly Bidlin holding down the fort at our Circus Sportsbook Studios in downtown Las Vegas. I'm Ben Wilson in for Gil next couple of days. A lot for us to talk about here in this second hour of the show. We'll get some of our college football playoff props. We have some win totals for individual teams out. We'll do that in 15 minutes. Nick Whalen from SiriusXM NBA and RotoWire joins us at the bottom of the hour to talk NBA Cup tonight, little NFL Week 15. And Kelly was just fascinated by Paul and I's, you were, what phrases did I use? Fixture congestion?
Fixture. Once you drop fixture congestion near the top, I was out of it. I was like, I don't know what's going on anymore.
You're done.
That took me like 90 seconds to even figure out. I'm like, I think that probably means it's like a Wednesday, like an NBA Wednesday for me where there's a lot of games just like going on at the same time. Am I right or no? I don't even know.
It just means you're playing a crap ton of games in a short amount of time. So.
Oh, so it's like one of these 2-week stretches they have where they've got to play like in three different leagues. Okay, now I got to figure it out.
Because, like, so the traditional schedule is you play one match every week, but now we've added all, you know, you've got these league cups and you've got the Champions League.
The Champions League goes all year now, so yeah.
Yeah, it basically. Anyway, a guy, you talk about fixture congestion, a guy who is on, it's a show congestion. He's on a lot of shows because he's awesome. He's Will Hill, joins us on our progressive guest line right now. Will, our very longtime Beeson contributor, Should Have Bet More podcast as well. I've contributed to the Bear Bets podcast. How you like that transition, Will? I'm, you know, I always try to be professional when I'm around you. So good to see you, buddy.
It was smooth. It was impressive, but I expect nothing less at this point.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just trying to suck up, Will. Apparently I'm on the Megapod this week, Will. So thank you for inviting me. It's even though it's not your podcast, but I appreciate you.
Of course. I'm the sheriff. New chief in town this week.
new chief in town. Will Hill getting me on the Megapod. I appreciate it. Well, we haven't really talked MLB at all because when this stuff breaks on an NFL Sunday and when we come into the Monday, it's really all NFL recap. But the huge news with the ripple effects around baseball, Will, the Juan Soto signing, who apparently chooses the Mets over the Yankees. And these reports come out that, you know, Yankees at the 12th hour, they had it was a 16-year offer originally, and the agencies from Scott Boras' side went back, said, hey, can you just like take off the final year, keep the price the same? And they were like, too rich for our blood, even though at that point you're talking a $760 million contract. At least for you now, and looking at the Mets, who have shorted to below the Yankees now, they're shorter than the Yankees to win the World Series next year. How real do you see this being now for a Mets team that has not been shy about spending? It's just, can they get to the finish line and actually put it all together?
Yeah, I mean, you have to think this isn't the final move, and that's maybe why Soto was sold on going to the Mets, because, I mean, there's been years of Hal Steinbrenner and the Yankees, you know, passing on the Bryce Harpers and the Machados and the Seegers and the Freddie Freemans and not being involved in Ohtani. Oh, he wanted to go west, maybe, but I think Soto, more than anything, from what it sounds like, and you're starting to see leaks of, hey, the Mets paid for the suite for Soto and his family, the Yankees weren't willing to do that. I don't know what any of this is true, but look, if he wanted to go back to the Yankees, there was enough money there. I think probably the tiebreaker for me was it was a better deal. It was a better contract. But maybe he was just sold on the fact that, hey, maybe once I sign with the Mets, they're going to keep spending. And if I sign with the Yankees, that's not going to be the case. You know, if you talk to Yankee fans, and I'm a Yankee fan, a bunch of my friends are Yankee fans, it's a lot of, you know, too much money anyway. Mets overspent. It's a lot of, you know, sour grapes, bitter ex-boyfriend kind of things. Let's face it, that's what happened. The Mets came in and they stole the Yankees' girlfriend. The Mets have been second fiddle on the field, off the field, since forever. And they came in and changed that in one fell swoop. They took one of the best players in baseball in his prime and they stole him away for the Yankees. It's a devastating blow for the Yankees. It takes them off the shortlist of contenders. Soto and Judge covered up a lot of the Yankee flaws. And you could say, hey, they're going to reinvest that money into other players. Maybe, we'll see. I'm sure they'll get somebody, but there's no replacing Soto. It crushes the Yankees. And look, if the Mets, they're going to need some pitching because, you know, Montas and Clay Holmes, who reunites with Soto, oddly enough, that's not championship pitching right now, but there's still a lot of pitchers out there. There's Fried, there's Burns, there's Sasaki. If they get one or two of these guys and they keep adding and adding, we'll see if they bring Alonso back. You put Lindor on that team with Soto. The Mets are building a juggernaut. Now, look, they're still in a division with the Phillies, the Braves, so I wouldn't be going to rush to bet the Mets because, you know, they could have a good year, win 94 games, still come in second or third. They have a lot of competition in that division. I think this hurts the Yankees more than it helps the Mets, but the Mets are certainly building a juggernaut here.
So Soto already became one of my favorite players when he, right after the World Series, just brought up it's basically open for business for me. I applaud him big time for that. Do you guys think it's even deeper than that, though? Like, was he always going to stay in New York City one way or the other, and he just played all of us?
No, I think he was going to go for the most money. I mean, these guys, we could talk about motivations and, you know, trying to get in these guys' heads, which I'm trying to do a little bit here. These guys usually just take the best deal, the most money. The Mets offer was more money. It was a $75 million signing bonus. The Yankee offer was less. It was more money for, you know, one fewer year. Like, it was more money. So you could sit here and say, well, the Yankees offer was still pretty good. It was respectable. It was, but it wasn't the Mets offer. So these guys usually take the most, you know, the biggest offer. I've heard this floated out there too, that maybe, you know, Cohen, with his background in finance, got into Soto's ear and said, hey, I can make you even more money, stock market investment, things like that. So I'm going to pay you this, but I can help you make even more money. And maybe Soto, not that he needs the money, but maybe that was, you know, something that went into it as well.
Good on him. Yeah, money's awesome.
Like, sir, yeah, if 760 is not enough for you, sir, let me tell you how I can make you even more. We'll definitely the conversation there. Will Hill with us right now on a numbers game at not the Will Hill, where you can follow William on the Twitter machine. How about college football playoff, Will? We went through some of the opening lines from yesterday. Been minimal line movement since then. Anything you're looking at with the four games that are officially lined, and anything in the futures market for you now that the 12-team playoff is set?
Yeah, it'd be dog or pass in these first four games, I think, in all of them. I think I like Tennessee the most. I don't know if we're looking seven and a half, of course, shop around. I just think the matchup of Ohio State's offensive line, which is still banged up, going against Tennessee, which has Pierce, which has a couple NFL guys, maybe two or three NFL guys in that front four for Tennessee, is a bad matchup for Tennessee. Obviously, the weather in these college football playoff games is going to take, be a factor here as we're playing cold weather in December, late December. I just think that's a close, low-scoring game. Iamaliava starting to play a little better. That Vandy game, they averaged 7.5 yards per play. And I think Herb Street on that that selection show, which took forever, I think we were 23 minutes in before we got one team announced. He actually made, I thought, a point that was really interesting, really insightful, that Ohio State, if it doesn't go well early, watch out, because they're at home and that home field advantage, so to speak, could work against them. Where, hey, they go 3-and-out early. Everyone's uptight. Everyone's on Kelly and Day. If they go 3-and-out the first couple series, that might start to get very awkward, very uncomfortable in that building, and that might start to the crowd might start to turn on Ohio State. So I think from a matchup standpoint, I think Tennessee matches up well, defensive line versus offensive line. I go back to that Indiana game with Ohio State, where I thought Indiana was live. I wasn't sold on Ohio State. I was a week early because Ohio State laid the egg a week later. I think that game got away from Indiana because they dropped a punt. They gave up a punt return touchdown. Now, Indiana couldn't really move the ball, but Ohio State didn't really run the ball, and they haven't run the ball with these offensive line injuries. So to me, that's a closer game. I like Tennessee getting the points. And again, I like either the dog or nothing at all of these games. I think Indiana getting a lot of points is live. I just think what's been the theme all year with college football? It's been parity. There's no great team. There's no dominant team. So why are we going to go out and lay a touchdown or more in any of these games? I think really all of these dogs are live. So Tennessee getting the points, Indiana getting the points. I even think that's a lot of points in Clemson versus Texas. So I wouldn't be surprised if we get a couple of upsets. I think one or two of these underdogs is going to win. And to me, there's one I'm sort of afraid of. It's Penn State versus SMU, just because I don't know if SMU can hold up just their offensive line against Penn State's defensive line. They were the more dominant team, from the second quarter on, really, against Clemson in that game. So to me, I think all of these lines are a touch high, though.
Sitting 7.5 right now, Notre Dame, 8.5 Penn State, 11 in the Texas game hosting Clemson, and then there are still some 7.5s out there, Will, for Tennessee and Ohio State. Actually, 1-8 still in the market as well, as Will Hill joins us right now. As far as the National Football League for Week 15, as we turn our attention forward, anything that's jumping out to you here on the early card?
Yeah, I'm going to take the Panthers. I think you get a minus a point or so, or minus a cheap money line, taking on the Cowboys. They played pretty well. I thought they were going to get destroyed by Philly, and there were a couple moments in that game where, hey, bounce of a ball, Philly had a chance to get margin. I thought Philly got really conservative, just kind of a strange game plan where they didn't look to put the foot on the throat of Carolina. But Young has been viable. He's been decent. The defense played a little bit better last week after not holding up in the run against Tampa a couple weeks ago. But if you just look at their last month, their last five games, I mean, they could have easily won 3, 4, 5 in a row here. They should have beaten Tampa. Chuba Hubbard fumbles in overtime and field goal range. Kansas City was a coin toss game. Last week, Leggett drops a ball that would have given them a lead with 44 seconds left. So to me, Dallas, we were all kind of rooting for Carolina. If you had nothing, just kind of rooting against the guy who bet $3 million, at least I was. And I'm rooting for Minnesota to somehow, possibly get the one seed. So, and you know how it is, because I laid the points with Philly. Once the team doesn't cover for you, you're like, screw them. I want them to lose the game straight up. But Carolina's been competitive here. I just think Dallas off of a short week. Overshawn is now hurt. I just think it's two teams going in different directions. So I do like Carolina on the cheap price there. And there's still some threes with Miami against the Texans. To me, just kind of two toss-up teams. When Miami has Tua and they have their guys, that's still like a top 10 team as long as the weather's okay and as long as they're playing a team that's not one of the elite teams in the league. So to me, this is a toss-up game. Miami's still playing for the chance to, hey, we run the table, we can get in the playoffs. So I think getting three there is a lot.
That was one that Kelly and I, we discussed yesterday. I like that Dolphins side too, especially because so often we see in the NFL with handicapping. You remember what you saw last. Dolphins should have lost outright against the Jets.
Right.
See, a little sour, the general thought and perception on where Miami is at. As far as these teams too, like, what team are you the most, I would say, like, your personal thought on is the most down on relative to the market. For me, it's clearly Houston, where I'm just not a believer in them whatsoever. Market continues to like them. Is there a team for you, Will, that you just find yourself week in and week out feeling much worse about than where the market has them at?
I would say Houston, but just to give a different answer, I can't trust a team with no kicker like Baltimore. Their pass defense is so bad, and I know like all the talent, and I know their A game is basically as good as anybody, but when you just don't have a kicker, these games are so close, you can't just a missed kick is a turnover, and they're very trustworthy in terms of Tucker and running him out there. So Baltimore for me has been a stay away these last couple weeks.
All right, well, Mark Wildown, Giants 8-1 on the money line this week. Lock it in there for Will Hill. Always good to see you, man. We'll catch up Thursday on the Megapod. Always a pleasure, man.
I'm sorry the Brewers fell short on Juan Soto.
Thank you for your condolences. I appreciate it. We'll come back. Talk some college football playoff next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Take your betting to the next level by playing the ponies on First Bet from Del Mar and Gulfstream Park to the Kentucky Derby and Preakness. First Bet has you covered. Sign up at firstbet.com. That is the number one, stbet.com. Use promo code VSiN200 to claim a 20% rebate for your first 60 days, up to $200. Head to firstbet.com today. As we're back on a numbers game, final half hour for us, and excited to go out to our progressive guest line, get in our guy, Nick Whalen. And you're about to be surrounded by Wisconsinites, Kelly.
That's right.
Adequately prepared on this Tuesday morning. I don't know if you have. I don't know. I'm not sure anybody can be prepared, but it's Nick Whalen joins us on the progressive guest line. Nick from SiriusXM, a fantasy channel, NBA as well. It's been awesome. I do a weekly hit with Nick over on his fantasy channel talking NFL. So great to see you, sir. And also should point out, Nick, excellent golf. Well, which is hard when you live in Wisconsin because you can only play like 4 months out of the year. But thanks for joining us, Nick. Are you also as high on the Milwaukee Bucks as Mr. Kelly Bidlin is tonight, kicking off the NBA Cup here as they are about 7-point favorites against the Magic at home?
I don't know if I'm quite as high as Kelly. You know, I was watching the show earlier today and glad to see that Kelly's on the right side of things here. But I don't know if I'm fully buying back in on this Milwaukee Bucks team. Certainly they're in a better spot than they were, you know, if you would have asked me 3 weeks ago, but have cleaned up on some of the bottom feeders in the Eastern Conference. You know, got a huge win over the Nets this weekend, but at the same time, I think my favorite play for the NBA Cup tonight has to be the under 215.5 in that Magic Bucks game. We got two of the biggest under teams in the NBA facing off. Obviously, the Magic down both Franz Wagner and Paolo Banchero. Both of these teams, they take a decent amount of threes, about league average, but Orlando gives up the fewest 3-point attempts per game, guys. And that's something that we got to monitor closely anytime you're playing an under in the NBA. Orlando, also the worst 3-point percentage team in the NBA. So they take it a decent amount of threes, but they're shooting them at just a 31% clip. Again, they're down their top two scorers by far. Bucks about league average in pace. Orlando's down at 25th. And I think, guys, if you like the under, you got to entertain Orlando here, because I think fewer points means tighter game. I think the Magic have the better coach in this situation in Jamal Mosley. He's my coach of the year so far. So I would not be surprised if the Orlando Magic hang around. I'm staying away from the side, but I have already played the under 215.5. And I take a look at some Jalen Suggs props as well. They're going to be juiced up a little bit. He's basically their only, you know, remaining dependable offensive option, but I like the over 24.5 points plus boards tonight for Suggs. Bucks are bottom 10 in the NBA in both points and rebounds allowed to the guard position this season. Would also take a look at Suggs over 2.5 made threes. He's taking a ton of threes because he has to, and the Bucks give up a ton of 3-point attempts per game.
Yeah, I know JVT and Zach Cohen here both betting those same exact props, actually. JVT over on the PRA over, and Zach on the over made threes. It's funny you say it, Nick, because I was looking, you know, okay, you're thinking, who's going to make up the scoring deficit here? Who else is going to contribute? I kind of circled back to the same thing you brought up, though. You want to look for other Magic players. The problem is, depending on them, depending on the minutes that they're going to get, even like you said, I think Suggs is probably the best look. JVT and I were talking a little bit about that off the air this morning. I think he would be the guy to make it up. I agree. Under is probably the way I'd look if I'm looking at the total in this game. And then when we look ahead to Mavericks Thunder, I think it'd be total. It'd be looking unders as far as the totals go in both games for me tonight. Any thoughts on that one later?
No, I think you're right. I think you're right. I like the under in that game as well. Much higher total, of course, at 231.5. And I will say, like, 215.5 is that's a high total for the Orlando Magic. You know, they'd probably be an even bigger under team if they didn't have so many totals sitting in like the 205, 207 range this season. And it's just, you look up and down that Magic roster and it's like, who's scoring for this team? How are they getting to 100 and, you know, 105, 110 points in this game? But yeah, in the late game, you know, again, staying away from the sides, nothing would surprise me there. I think I would take the 4.5 with Dallas, but you know, OKC, even without Chet Holmgren, they've still been a really good defensive team. They have the type of guards and Alex Caruso and Cason Wallace, you know, who could give trouble to guys like Kyrie and Luka Doncic. And I know we're only in year two, guys, of the NBA Cup, so we don't have a huge sample to work from, but the whole goal of this is to kind of make it feel like a playoff atmosphere, right? And what do we tend to see in NBA playoff games? You know, better defense, more focus, better coaching. You know, these teams are well rested coming into these games. They'll be prepared. So I think if you factor in, you know, kind of an uptick in intensity, especially on the defensive end, that pushes me toward unders in both of these games tonight.
Ben, personally, if we could bet on show side props, I would have lost so much money already. I'm stunned that Drew Dinsick is actually backing the Bucks, and then Nick Whalen, no, nothing from him, absolutely nothing from him.
Stay away. I can't be a homer, guys. I can't be too much of a homer.
It's, you know, there's some emotional hedging going on there, Kelly. That's just kind of how it is. We can't get too over our skates there. It's, and looking at the Dallas side of it, though, just kind of for the future, Nick, and a team since they are a contender in the West, you followed them very closely. Yep. But it's a group over the last 10 games, they're second in offensive rating, eighth on defense, best net rating in the NBA through this 9-1 stretch. I've been playing around trying to think, is there a best futures way to bet Dallas, whether it is Luka Doncic in the MVP market, whether it's, you know, Dallas is still 8.5-1 to get the one seed. They're about +140 to win their division right now. Is that a team that you are also looking to find a way to invest some sort of way, since the market has not completely caught up as far as the pricing, as far as Dallas being a legit Western Conference true contender?
Yeah, I think you have to look at the Mavericks right now, and you know, Dallas +550 to win the West is where I would direct my attention. You know, 10-1 to win the finals. That's, you know, matching up against Boston, the team that I likely think comes out of the Eastern Conference. You know, could be a rematch, but I think 2 years in a row that would be a matchup that favors the Boston Celtics. So I would look at Dallas +550 to come out of the West, and you know, obviously you got OKC sitting at the top right now. They'll only get better once they get Chet Holmgren back in the mix. But you know, the Western Conference, as usual, is much deeper than the East. But like, who else are you really, really scared of right now? It's like, I know Memphis is ahead of Dallas in the standings. It's a good Memphis team. It's still a team that I think Dallas could beat in a playoff series. You know, Houston, they're technically ahead of them right now. You know, still a young team. Maybe they make a splash. Maybe they bring in Jimmy Butler. Who knows? But I still think that's a team that I would take Dallas in a playoff series. You know, Golden State, we'll see, kind of an aging team. I'm not really worried about the Clippers, not worried about the Lakers. And then, like, you know, the Nuggets and the Timberwolves are the two teams that I think a lot of people thought we would be talking about in this context. And Minnesota looks lost to me, man. This is not a good basketball team. They're a team that looks like they're missing a piece. That piece might be Karl Anthony Towns, unless they make some sort of addition, which I don't think they will, based on how this team has operated over the last calendar year. I don't really consider them a true contender. And now, you can never cross off Denver, guys, with the way Jokic is playing, but that has not had the feel of a title contending team either. So if you're kind of looking beyond OKC in the Western Conference, okay, which team in that next bunch do I trust most? It would have to be the Dallas Mavericks, no question.
That's 10-1 there to win it all. As far as the actual NBA Cup and the games still to come, you mentioned Golden State and Houston as two teams who are kind of, you know, you don't necessarily worry about them long term, but they are facing each other tomorrow. That's the Western Conference quarterfinal matchup. And it's that weird situation, Nick, where we've already had two games between the two. Yep. Golden State has won both. They've been extremely tight. Houston laying 2.5 at home tomorrow. How do you see that playing out?
Yeah, this is another difficult one, you know, and I will mention, you know, Dallas 9-1 to win the NBA Cup, I think is actually a pretty solid bet as well. If they can get through this first game, I think they'll be in a pretty good spot. And, you know, if you're giving me 2.5 with Golden State, even on the road in Houston, I think I would take that. I trust the Golden State infrastructure more than I do right now the Houston Rockets, who at times, you know, have looked like one of the five best teams in the NBA. They'll also have these blow up games every now and then where, you know, Ime Udoka goes wild or Alperen Şengün just kind of no shows. Like they still don't have that one guy that you can depend on every single night. And I think Şengün is getting close to joining that conversation, but he's not there quite yet. You know, Golden State should be healthy coming into this one. You know, Steph and Draymond have missed some time over the last couple of weeks, but they should be good to go. And keep in mind, Golden State has already beat Houston twice straight up this season without Steph Curry playing in both of those games. And one of those, they didn't have Steph or Draymond. So I know it's difficult to beat a team three times. You're always going to hear that, but I lean Golden State here with Curry and Draymond in the mix. And, you know, especially if you give me the 2.5, I'll take Golden State to cover in. Why not? We'll take them to win that game straight up and set up a matchup with the Mavs in the semis.
There you go. Look, Dallas plus 155, Golden State plus 120. Have yourself a day with the underdogs there. Nick Whelan with us right now on a numbers game. I have to admit, when I first looked at the card for the NBA Cup, the first round games in the quarters, I kind of thought, man, Atlanta, they're just begging to get bet here. And they have gotten some money from 8.5-point dogs in New York down to 7. But you know, the more you dig in on these New York numbers, they've been so good. Best offensive team in the league, last 10-plus games. Where are you at on Hawks and Knicks tomorrow at MSG?
Yeah, I mean, the Hawks, they're begging us to take them seriously, especially over these last couple of weeks. They banked some really impressive wins, you know, hanging in with Cleveland and Boston, you know, doing the same against Milwaukee last week. I still think this would be a Knicks spot for me. You know, I can't be going too many underdogs here, guys. I think the Knicks are playing so well offensively right now. It is heavily starting five dependent. They are the highest scoring starting five in NBA history right now. You know, just had another game last night where they put up 91 combined points from that starting five. So you worry a little bit about the bench, but I think in this spot, I trust the Knicks to take care of business. And this could be one to look over on as well. I know it's a high total at 237, but we know neither of these teams, especially Atlanta, play defense.
Not particularly, no. From 233.5 all the way up to 237. Always great to have Nick Whelan on with us, man. Be well. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, anytime, guys. Enjoy the rest of the show.
We'll come back, wrap everything up with our best bets on the other side right here on A Numbers Game.